Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, episode 33. Hello and welcome to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Williams, and along with me I have my good friend and co-host, Rachel Cruz.
Hello.
In this episode, we are continuing on with our books to movies theme with a discussion of the films The Princess Bride, Road to Perdition, Mean Girls, and Away from Her. Before getting into the discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And we would also like to welcome our new sponsor to the show, which is Audible. For our listeners of the Plain Label Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a 30-day free trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. For this episode, our audiobook recommendation is The Princess Bride, written by William Goldwyn and narrated by the film's director, Rob Reiner. This unabridged reading is over 2.5 hours long, and it can be yours for free. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/plainlabel. Again, that's audibletrial.com/plainlabel for your free audiobook. All right, Cruz, so drink roll call. What do you have for me?
I am drinking vodka cranberry.
Whoa, all right. That's interesting. I'm going with a little wine. I'm not feeling so hot after the convention. I'm a little, I think there's a lot of people around. You get that con crud, as it's known.
Seriously?
A lot of shaking hands, a lot of anti-back going on, but I still don't feel so good afterwards. But so I just got like about a half a glass of wine, and it's like a red blend. And I forget the name of it, and I don't want to go look for it.
I thought you meant you were hungover.
Oh, no. That, I behaved myself except for Thursday night.
Oh.
So the rest of the time I was fine. So, Cruiser, let's kick off our discussion. And these are a little sub-genre of books to movies. These are movies that we didn't know were books.
Right.
And so the first one we're going to discuss is 1987's The Princess Bride.
Grandfather's here.
Can't you tell me I'm sick? He'll pinch my cheek. I hate that.
Maybe he won't.
Hey, how is this sickie? Huh? I brought you a special present.
What is it?
It was the book my father used to read to me when I was sick, and I used to read it to your father. And today, I'm going to read it to you.
It was a time when life didn't seem so complicated.
Marriage is what brings us together today.
What?
What? What?
I'm killing myself once we reach the honeymoon suite.
Wouldn't that be nice?
A courtly age of gentle conversation.
I will always come for you.
But how can you be sure?
This is true love.
Oh, no. Is this a kissing book?
No. Actually, there was a lot of treachery. Peril. And revenge.
Prepare to die.
Never go in against the Sicilian when death is on the line!
There were affairs of state.
But I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan, my wedding to arrange, my wife to murder, and Gilda to frame for it. I'm swamped.
And affairs of the heart.
My Wesley will always come for me.
Your Wesley is dead.
I've seen worse.
Bye, bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!
It's more than turning.
What's the difference? You got him.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Goodbye!
It's a story of love. A tale of adventure. It's as real as the feelings you feel.
You're kissing again.
Someday you may not mind so much.
The Princess Bride. Not just your basic, average, everyday, ordinary, run-of-the-mill, ho-hum fairy tale.
Blending comedy, adventure, romance, and fantasy, this cult classic follows a peasant farmhand Wesley as he battles three bumbling outlaws and a nefarious prince to win the hand of his one true love, a young woman named Buttercup.
So this was your selection, Cruz. Tell me about you and The Princess Bride. Is this one of your favorites?
It's definitely one of those where you don't remember watching it for the first time because you were so little.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a family movie for us, like for like my extended family, because I have 8 girl cousins. There are 8 of us all together on my mom's side.
Ridiculous.
And my cousin just got married last year, and she's walking up the aisle, and it's all pretty, and the music's playing, and everyone stops, and the pastor or whatever gets ready, and he goes, "Marriage!
Marriage!"
And everybody just busts out laughing. And my other cousin looks at me, she goes, "I was going to do that at my wedding." So it's pretty old. Like, we've had it in the family for a long time, I guess. We quote it a lot, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, being older than you, this wasn't one that I saw at in the theater or anything like that, but this is 1987, like I said. So I was, you know, 7, 8, depending on when this came out. And it's a film that I've seen quite a bit, but it's a film that I remember the first probably 40 minutes much better than I do the end. And I kind of came across that again today when I was watching it. So yeah, I guess this is actually the one that I have sort of the least notes about, because I feel like my general thoughts of it is it's just a little bit of fun and it's very light and you don't have to think about it. And it's just kind of a nice film to put on in the background and go about your day.
Right.
So I like that. I think that, you know, Cary Elwes is really good as Wesley. I think that, you know, this is Robin Wright, later known Robert Wright Penn, is good as Buttercup, even though she's kind of limited as to what she's asked to do.
Yeah.
But I think the whole fun for me is all of the sort of supporting characters.
Yes.
You know, you've got all of the different lines that Andre the Giant has.
Inigo Montoya.
Inigo Montoya is great. You have Wallace Shawn as Vizzini.
Oh man, with the lisp.
Yeah, he's tough to take. He's in a lot of Star Trek stuff, so you see him a lot in that. Which is kind of interesting because he always plays, you know, the same type of character to where he's
Weasley
kind of smarmy. Guy. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. And one of the characters that I didn't realize that was who it was the guy that Inigo Montoya is chasing after. The actor that plays him is Christopher Guest. Christopher Guest from Best in Show and Spinal Tap.
Really? It doesn't look like him. The Six-Fingered Man?
Yeah.
No shit.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. And then... Well, you know, like I said, I think for me the most fun is watching Andre the Giant, I could just imagine that being such a strange like filming process with him. You know,
you have to say words now. You can't just beat people up.
Yeah, and it's like you have to like, I can't understand what you're saying. Do it again. You know, like, yeah, you're. I don't know. That's fascinating to me. Like
one of our favorite quotable lines, my older sister and I, is "Does anybody want a peanut?"
You know what's weird is I remember that from "I Love You, Ma'am." When that line.
I don't remember that being in there.
Yeah, he Marshall, whatever his real name is.
Right.
he says he's doing an impression, and he says, "Anybody want a peanut?" And it makes it's when they're eating fish tacos.
Oh, okay.
And it makes Paul Rudd basically spit beer and that kind of thing.
Oh.
And I was like, what the hell? Like, I knew that it was Andre the Giant, and I figured it had to have been from this movie, but I couldn't remember when exactly it was.
That's it, when he's rhyming with everything he says.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the way that I felt throughout this film, was it had been such a long time since I had seen it last. Like, I remember the general idea of it all, but I couldn't remember all the specific scenes.
Yeah. So as far as like, well, like, you know, and then if we're talking about supporting characters, Fred Savage and the grandpa are really cute too.
Yeah. Peter Falk.
Yeah. And he's like, is this a kissing book? You know, he's just like a typical little boy. He doesn't want to worry about that. And I thought that was cute. So, you know, when I found out that this had been a book, I wonder, you know, is the book just the book, you know, that he's reading to him, or
Or does it have the stuff with the grandson? Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know the answer to that, actually, unfortunately.
How do you read the book?
Yeah, I know. They could go to Audible and they could listen to it and tell us.
Wrong. You'd be like, look here, idiots.
Yeah, that's right. How do you not know this? Morons.
We could do your research.
Yeah, really. Another one of the things is, you know, reading that Netflix synopsis, it was talking about how this was a cult classic. Well, this was actually nominated for an Oscar.
Really?
Believe it or not, it was for the song Storybook Love, which is actually probably the song that will close our show for this episode.
Wow, that's romantic.
Oh, isn't that nice? Mm-hmm. And so it didn't win, but it was nominated in 1988, which, you know, and then this is because IMDb is kind of that cult, like, movie nerds and movie, like, idiots kind of a thing. This is 192nd in the top 250 of all time, which... I mean, I think the movie's fine. Like, I have a lot of fun watching it, but I don't know that it's the 192nd greatest movie of all time.
What? You Wish? It is a love story.
Yeah, the As You Wish as he's falling down the hill. Like, I remember specifically thinking that was really funny when I was littler, and I watch it now and I'm just like, yeah, boy.
Well, let me tell you about Carrie. What's his name? Carrie?
Carrie Ewells.
Okay, so he did this, and then I remember when I was little watching him in Men in Tights.
Oh, yes, that is right? Hilarious, yes.
So then the next time I see him is in Saw.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened to you?
I think I think I saw him in, he was in some of the later episodes of the X-Files.
Oh, see, I didn't watch that.
And he looked very similar to how he looks in Saw.
Yeah.
So.
I figured he was, like, dead or something in Saw, and I was like, no shit.
Yeah, and then... Yeah, that was quite a departure for him in Saw. Like, he's quite a different character. it's a little different. So one of the things that I forgot about that I wanted to mention is I forgot all about the ridiculously big rodents.
Rodents of unusual size.
Yes.
Ridiculously big rodents.
And I forgot all about them, and so when I saw them, I was like, ew, sick.
Yeah.
And they're fucking disgusting.
Yeah, they are. They're nasty.
And what's gross is when, you know, some of the things that I thought were nice touches is, you know, he's fighting them and they're biting his shoulder and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he's lifting their jaws apart and their tongue is like going all over the place in there. And I'm like, yeah. Oh my God. So I don't know. Like, I think it's a lot of fun just for stuff like that. And, for me, the most memorable stuff is the Inigo Montoya.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember in, you know, middle school and even people in high school that would be talking about, would be saying that line over and over.
Right.
And so, then
whenever you have to go to somewhere where you have a name tag, that's what you write as your name.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya.
Yeah.
I have not done that. It would not surprise me if you have, though.
Sometimes I don't need people to know who I am.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they would buy you as being an Inigo, though.
You don't know. You know me. Mm. I tan a lot in the summer.
That's true.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like that, I mean, I put it on here because I had no idea that it was a book. So mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of interesting. And like you said, it is really a fun story. And it's just like a nice movie because it's got a nice little happy ending and, it's got some really funny one-liners and Billy Crystal shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, it's got some storybook. I don't know. I just thought it's a nice movie.
Yeah, it's nice. It's, you know, I think Billy Crystal is actually fairly funny in it because of he's supposed to kind of be a ridiculous character. This is kind of when Billy Crystal was a thing.
Yes.
And so, like, if he came out now, they'd be like, "Who the fuck is this guy? Oh, this is the dude that used to do the Oscars." Okay.
Oh my God.
Or they'd be like, "Oh, it's the City Slickers guy." Like, hey, hey, dude.
It's Harry.
Yeah, but this actually didn't do... I mean, they talk about it being a cult classic, but it almost doubled its budget. I mean, the budget was $16 million, and it made almost $31 million.
Does a cult classic mean it has to do badly?
Typically, it's one that doesn't make a lot, but is sort of beloved after the fact. But I don't think, like, I think that they just slapped that label on anything that wasn't a huge success that people sort of adore now.
Right.
So I don't know. I think that's kind of I think it's just such a lazy label to put on things.
I think it's a nice movie from my childhood.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. Like I said, I don't have a lot to say about it because there's not really a lot to dissect about it.
Right. I feel like if I read the book, we'd have a little bit more to talk about because I really do now. I'm going to have to read the book to see if the grandfather, because that'd be like Inception. That'd be like a book inside of a book.
Dang, that's crazy.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's where they got the idea.
You know, speaking of Inception, I just saw a thing online where it was talking about how, like, the end of Inception, and you know how he's got his totem, and that's the little top?
Yeah.
And the theory, and I didn't read this very well, so this could be complete BS, but the theory is that that's not actually his totem. His totem is actually his wedding ring that he wears.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the real world, he always has a wedding ring on, and in his imaginary world, he doesn't, I guess.
Okay.
And then towards the end, that whole top stuff is a bunch of bullshit because it's like misdirection because he has his wedding ring on, so you know it's the real world.
Good.
And the top thing is just like to psych you out.
It did. Did it not psych you out?
Well, yeah, because you're like, oh shit, did it wobble or not?
It totally wobbled, by the way.
I don't know. We'll see.
I thought the theory was that at the end of Titanic, he goes under the water, and then the beginning of Inception, he washes up on the beach.
Oh, interesting.
So it's like the movies are linked together.
There's like when you look at movie conspiracy theorists or like connections of movies online, like some of them are absolutely ridiculous.
That one's not.
That one's not, Cruz. I'll give you that. If you want it to be that,
it's Jack Dawson.
I'll allow it.
I think I heard it like when he watched one of the videos, like, ooh, ooh, ooh. No?
I love that that's in the show. So anyway, do you have anything else about The Princess Bride? It's beloved. I don't know that it's, there's some things that, I don't know. I mean, it's not worthy of like, well, I don't want to say it like that. It's not a film to really dissect, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost like, it is kind of a kid movie. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can't really get into, like, character development and stuff like that. Because it's just a nice little
character. Yeah, and it's directed by Rob Reiner, who did When Harry Met Sally and Spinal Tap. And so he's not necessarily known for, like,
gritty
camera moves and shot selection and that kind of stuff, you know.
I did like the sword scene, the sword
play. Oh, yeah, that was actually really well done when I watched it again.
Yeah, I liked that. And the fighting with, what is he, the Dread Pirate Robert or whatever he called
right,
him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Andre the Giant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I do enjoy this one. So let's move on to our next film, and it is 2002's Road to Perdition.
Peter, I can't come to your concert tonight. I'm working.
Working at what? What's Papa's job?
He works for Mr. Rooney.
Who's got a hug for a lonely old man?
Papa didn't have a father, so Mr. Rooney looked after him.
You rule this town as God rules the earth.
I love Mr. Rooney. We had nothing. He gave us a home. A life.
Oh. He goes on missions for Mr. Rooney.
Take Mike with you.
Not Pond.
Take Mike with you.
They're very dangerous. That's why he brings his gun.
Connor, what the hell are you thinking?
He saw everything.
Can he keep a secret?
He's my son.
A man of honor always keeps his word.
Michael, tomorrow when they find out we're gone, they're going to come after us. I have to protect you now.
I'd like to apologize especially to you, Pa.
You would like to apologize? Sons are put on this earth to trouble their fathers. Natural law.
You gotta take him now.
I know who to call.
There's a guy who's done some work for us in the past.
To be paid to do what you love. Ain't that the dream?
Get out! I cannot fight you and them at the same time.
I can take care of myself fine! You think it's my fault this happened?
It was not your fault!
You won't make it. Not with a little boy.
What are you gonna do?
Just one last thing, and then it's done. Back to the tractor, Mike.
Watch out for the tractor!
We made it!
Oh, yeah, we made it.
This is the life we chose, the life we lead. And there is only one guarantee. None of us will see heaven.
Michael could.
Hitman Michael Sullivan, known in his 1930s Chicago world as the Angel of Death, is on the run after his wife and son are murdered. With his surviving son in tow, Michael sets out to exact brutal vengeance. Complicating matters in this crime actioner are a reporter, Al Capone's enforcer, and other shady characters.
And what's interesting about this is the selections, because we didn't really have like a specific guide, right? It was just like, hey, pick two movies that are based that you didn't know was a book when you watched them.
Right. You had to watch the movie thinking the movie was badass, and then later you found out it was a book.
And so you pick a movie that is a children's movie, and then you pick a very girly movie, and I pick two very serious, very depressing films.
What did I text you?
You texted me a lot of stuff, which kind of made me nervous. I was like, oh boy.
Wait, I want to get verbatim what I texted you. Wasn't that yesterday?
Yeah, well, you were talking about your stripper name and stuff.
No, right at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Ugh, why don't you ever pick happy movies, you sick son of a bitch?
Yeah. Yeah, that's that's about right. I mean,
something wrong with you.
I don't know. Okay, so Road to Perdition. This is based on the graphic novel of the same name.
Oh.
And it's one that I have not read. It's written by Max Allen Collins, and it was drawn by Richard Piers Rayner, I guess I should say. And the reason I picked this is when I found out it was a graphic novel, I didn't read it, and I'm sort of glad. This is one that I don't own either. And from all reports that I have heard, that this is a much better film than it is a book.
You rarely hear that.
Yeah, and that's why I thought this was interesting.
What? Well, Tom Hanks isn't in the book, is he?
No, Tom Hanks. No Tom Hanks with... You know, when I first saw this this poster, it was not the poster that's on IMDb. It's a close-up of his face that's on the DVD case.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh, nice mustache, Tom. Like, that is not...
It's a chill mustache. I don't care if you're the 30s.
Like, that's not a good look.
No.
So this was my pick, like I said. And so I have just a couple of more notes than I did for Princess Bride. Just a few. So the first thing I wanted to say is I really sort of love this music in the film.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. It's like haunting a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, like, I guess I didn't ask you this. Was this a first watch for you?
Yeah, I had seen like a snippet of this, like when they were driving the car and they were at the farmhouse. Like, I remember watching that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I was drunk or I don't really know why I was watching that, but I did not know the whole story, and I had never watched it from start to finish. So yes, it was a first watch for me.
Okay. So yeah, I do like the music quite a bit. And one of the things that this is a Sam Mendes film who, for those that don't know Sam Mendes, he just recently directed the most recent Bond film, the Skyfall.
Oh, weird.
But he's best known for directing American Beauty and this, and he was a play director. And so he directed American Beauty, Road to Perdition, and then he did Jarhead, Revolutionary Road, Away We Go, and then Skyfall.
Revolutionary Road. That was also a book into a movie.
Yeah, and so was Jarhead.
Well, don't you know everything?
One of the things that I like about Sam Mendes, because I really like him, I think he gets picked on a little bit because of like the paper bag scene in American Beauty, or the plastic bag scene.
That's fucking beautiful.
Where it's like, the world's so beautiful, and all that. Like, he gets picked on a little bit for that, I feel like. Because
he's the movie, though.
Yeah, because I think that people, like non serious film fans, can see him and think he's very pretentious because of the way that he shoots things. Because
I love the way this was shot.
Yeah, me too. But because I think that he takes angles and camera moves very seriously, I feel like.
I was really impressed. Like, I remember watching this thinking, wow, that's gorgeous, the mm-hmm. way that he was. Well, I mean, like, it probably helped that there were a lot of pretty places that he was, using as whatever as for the scenes. But, like, I remember when they're in the hotel, and he leaves the sun.
Yes.
And he comes back and they're parallel to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, that's good.
Damn, son.
Shit, son.
Yeah. So one of the things that I like that's very specific, a very specific choice at the beginning is, this is told through younger Michael Jr.
Right.
It's told through his eyes. And he, at the beginning of the film, doesn't really know his father. He's not real close to him. He doesn't really know what he does. He kind of invents a thing for his younger brother.
Right.
That he does. And what I like is the first time that they show Tom Hanks, they're showing like bits of him. Like, they show his feet and his bottom of his pants, and then they show like the back of him. And it's just like a real slow reveal of him. And it's almost like that's the way that the kid views him.
Wow. He literally can't see all of him.
Uh-huh.
That's a mind blow right there.
Right there. I'm glad you got that, Cruz. And I guess one of the things that I love about this is, well, first of all, I think this cast is outstanding.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And I love the choice to have Tom Hanks play this stoic, quiet character, because Tom Hanks to me is usually like Tom Hanks is always going to be the guy from Big for me, because that was kind of my first real introduction to him.
Yeah.
And he's been in several other things, and he's been in a lot different roles, from Forrest Gump to Castaway to whatever. Dugan. To what?
Jimmy Dugan.
Yeah, don't avoid the clap. So he's been in a lot of other stuff, but I feel like this is very different from what he normally is. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, and I feel like, he's a hitman. Like, at the very end when he says, if people ask if my dad was a good man or a bad man, I'm like, he's obviously a good guy. Like, that's all I could think of was like, oh, poor Tom Hanks. I totally got what was going on, and I feel like he did pull off the whole gangster thing,
mm-hmm.
because, right at the beginning, I'm like, I can't see him killing people, but he does it out of necessity, except for, obviously, Daniel Craig.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he sold me on it, so I was surprised about that a little bit,
yes.
But I think I was... were you totally with him then as the dad, or were you kind of thinking he was a shitbag at times?
I thought he did a good job of, how do I want to say this? I think that he is good at being distant from his son.
Yeah, I agree.
But I always see him as, you're all right, Tom. Like, it'll be okay.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, like he always, like he, you could tell he loves his family. Mm-hmm. He wasn't like a cold, he was kind of cold to them, I guess, but like obviously when his wife and son dies, he loses it. Mm-hmm. And then spoiler, I guess, I don't know. He asked him, the son asked him, why you treated me differently than Peter or whatever, and he's like, because you were more like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so and then there's hugging going on, so like you can tell that he, he has a heart. He's not like a calculating, I don't know. I just feel like
There's more to him.
Right, and I probably just biased because I love Tom Hanks. Like, one of my life goals is to have him, like, rustle my hair and tell me, you know, like, you're a good kid.
So. Nice. I like that, Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
So getting away from Tom Hanks a little bit, I put that I wished Paul Newman was my grandfather because he, in this, he's just like, I don't know, Paul Newman is just such a comforting character on screen for me. Because I feel like if he's on the screen, it's not going to be a shitty film.
That is true. He's a really good actor.
And so when I see him and the way that he is with Michael Sullivan's kids, and he knows that they're not supposed to bring the dice, but he tells them to bring it anyway, and he goes and, you know, and he's kind of like playing around and all that kind of thing. And
yeah, he is. I mean, I thought at the beginning that that was their grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and they basically was. And then I just feel like him as kind of this Irish godfather type.
Oh, totally.
You know, is awesome. And some of the things that I wanted to discuss is, especially at the beginning, one of my favorite scenes is where Tom Hanks and Paul Newman are playing the piano together.
That says Irish songs on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that says so much and sets up so much of the film in a scene where they're really just drinking and playing the piano. Because, you know, they're playing the piano. They're obviously, it's a surrogate father-son situation.
Right.
You see Daniel Craig, who is Paul Newman's actual son, and a fuck-up.
Yeah, doesn't he do great as a fuck-up?
Oh, Daniel Craig is great in this. And they show him watching, realizing that he's not the favorite, even though he is his biological son. And you know then that Daniel Craig is going to do something to fuck this up.
Right, and you can tell that he's nutso, because he says fuck to a little kid.
Yeah, because that's when he goes, why are you always smiling? And he says, because it's all so fucking hysterical.
So I just realized that, like, this movie, the cast in this movie is, like, completely opposite of what I'm used to. Because Paul Newman, like, I agree with you that he's a really good actor, but, like when I saw him in some of the scenes, I'm like, God, he used to be so hot. Like, that's all I could think about.
Right.
And so, like, I was sad for that. And then Jude Law is, like, the biggest creeper on the planet.
Oh, he is so disgusting.
Hide with the teeth, and, like, his lips are the same color as his skin. And
his,
like,
hair is all plucked out in the front.
Right. And he's supposed to be hot, too, in real life. And then Daniel Craig is supposed to be James Bond for me. He's supposed to be the stand-up guy. And then he totally is the opposite in this movie. He's a sniveling little shitbag.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom Hanks is, you know, a gangster. So there's a lot of things going on here that I had to wrap my head around. So it took me a little bit, I'm just saying.
Right. One of the other scenes is I think that the relationship between Paul Newman and Daniel Craig, or I guess they're John and Connor Rooney is the names, but the relationship between them is so nice because you have that scene where John Rooney, the father, is making Connor apologize to everybody for what he's done. And he says, I would like to apologize.
Connor, is there something you would like to say about last night?
I'd like to apologize for what happened. Especially to you, Pa. 2 weeks and a month. What can I say?
We lost a good man last night. You think it's funny? Try again.
I'd like to apologize.
You would like to apologize? Try again.
And he slams the table.
And he says, try again. And he says, I would like to apologize. He says, try again. And then he says, gentlemen, my apologies. And it's just like such a little thing when you think about it, because you think, you know, oh, I'd like to apologize. Or, I'm sorry if what I said offended someone. Like, you, the way that language is used like that, it's so specific because when you're saying I would like to apologize, you're not actually apologizing.
Right.
You would like to, but you're not. Yeah. Or right. Or it's like, if what I said offended someone, then I'm sorry. You're not sorry for what you said. You're sorry if someone was offended by it.
Right, and he drove the point home, like, you need to be fucking sorry for what happened.
Yeah.
And then he walks away with...
such a fucking dick.
And then he walks away with Tom Hanks. And see, there's another good... I thought it was good directing where they show them and then his face is blurry. And, like, as soon as they turn the corner, his face comes back into clear.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, shit.
Mm-hmm. And so the next scene that I wanted to mention is the... It's when it's when Tom Hanks is looking for, or he's delivering a note, he's delivering a message, and he goes and delivers it to this this loud club.
That was sweet.
And he goes in there, and you know the guy owes John Rooney a lot of muscle, but Connor Rooney has written a note that says, you know, kill Sullivan and all your debts are taken care of. And I thought that was so great because they were just looking at each other and then you just kind of watch the eyes, notice certain things. And again, I think that that's so heavily relying upon the direction and the actors and not necessarily the script.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that that's just nice because I feel like anymore in movies, everything is so explained and so overly explained that I kind of like when they do the opposite of that.
Well, and I feel like that's a lot in this movie because they never say he's a hitman, you know, and they never come out and say, you know, like what's going on really. And you just have to get a sense of it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciate that when people don't dumb things down for me, it makes me feel smarter when I figure it out. Granted, it probably takes me an hour and a half, but
one of the other shots that I really liked was the Jaws shot is sort of what I think of it, but it's the introduction of Jude Law's character. And it's when he's underneath the train tracks and they do that zoom in and zoom out at the same time. And so like the character, he's walking towards the camera and the character is zoomed in, but the surrounding outsides is zoomed out
at
the same time. And I think that's something that if you use it more than once in a film can like be a little bit masturbatory, I feel like, because it's like, oh, look what I can do. But
but
at the same time, like, I think it looks cool. I think it looks cool when you use it.
Okay. Well, some scenes that I liked were the one in the rain.
Oh yes.
That was
fucking
nice. Love. That instead of a ridiculous amount of loud gunshots,
mm-hmm.
we just heard, like, music.
Yeah, just music, and then you have Paul Newman who doesn't even turn around.
Yeah, that's badass.
During the scene. That they look so badass in that, with the way that the rain is coming down on their hats.
I totally agree. And then, you know, they save the loud gunshots for him.
Mm-hmm. And
totally right.
Wasn't that interesting that instead of just one shot, he just shoots the shit
out
of him.
That's what I thought. I was like, overkill.
Yeah.
Literally overkill.
Yeah, no shit. So I don't know. I just thought that was really kind of.
Well, I mean, maybe it got away from him. It was like a gat. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, it was like a Tommy gun type thing. Yeah.
Right. And then another scene that I liked, albeit it was Eric Williams-esque, was when he's watching his son in the beach out the window, of course.
Oh, yeah, at the end.
And the window takes, like, I feel like it takes away some of, like, obviously it's horrible what happens, but I feel like having that window there, like, just takes it away a little bit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, now, I didn't see all of it.
I'm guessing you kind of could see it coming because he's just sitting there.
Right. Oh, what a happy ending. I'm like, no, this is an Eric Williams movie. It's happening. And I don't know about you, but like, I knew something shitty was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but I totally forgot about Jude Law.
Yes.
Like I was like totally diverted by like him making his final stand, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, son of a bitch, that sneaky little fucker.
Yeah. And what's nice is, you know, spoilers, but he gets shot and it's such a deep, like, base of a shotgun. Like, it's not like a pop. You know, like, it's this really deep
sound.
Yeah,
but when he's shooting at it before, it, like, goes through the wall.
Yeah. And so he shoots him in the back, and then he falls down, and then you see, out of the corner, the shadow of Jude Law stand up.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's really clever, because every other director, I feel like, would have just had him standing in the doorway or something.
Sure, I totally agree. And the window kind of, like, you know, it wasn't super clear what was going on, you mm-hmm. know? You had to look for it. And then when you get to the inside of the room, it's all white. And he's wearing white and a little bit of gray, but then the blood is just so red.
Yes. Yeah, that's really nice. I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah. And then, you know, the sun comes in, blah, blah, and he kills Jude Law so the sun doesn't have to. Isn't that how that works?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the sun was going to, and actually in the book, the sun, I believe, does kill him.
Oh, I like it better this way.
Me too. I think, actually, I don't know that it's him. I know that the sun does kill someone, because Max Allen Collins was a little bit, not unhappy, but like, oh, that's interesting, that he did kill someone in the book, but in the movie he doesn't.
Oh.
Because in the book, I believe he is older and is a priest.
The sun?
Yeah, and that's where he's telling the story, as opposed to being younger on the beach.
I don't like any of what you're saying. No wonder the movie's better.
Yeah, so...
I mean, the whole point is, like, so the sun doesn't go down the same road.
Right.
So he took that off of his conscience because Tom Hanks has killed, like, a bajillion people.
Sure. What did you think of Jude Law's makeup at the end there?
That was awesome.
Didn't that look cool?
Yeah. I forgot, like, I just forget about everything Jude Law in this movie until, like, he lifts his face up and you're like, oh, shit, he fucked you up good. So, like, no wonder he wanted to come get him.
Yeah.
He did that to his face.
Yeah, and what was interesting is, watching it this time around, is they talk about early on how they can't go to Sarah's because Jude Law's character knows that they're going to be there. You know, and they says, oh, we can't go there. And then they have that shootout. And I think Tom Hanks also forgets about him because he thinks he's done.
Thinks that because he's done, that was called off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause he went and finished off Jude Law or Daniel Craig in a really quick scene, which I really liked that. I liked how it wasn't this big drawn out, like gunfight kind of thing. He just figures out where Connor is. Walks up there, sees him in the bath, shoots him, and then goes about his day.
And then he bumps the mirror, and you get to see it.
Yeah, that's another cool little director.
Yeah. And I like that, too. I like that Connor was shot in the bathtub because, like, I feel like it's fitting because he's a little shit that had everyone else fight his battles for him in the first place, so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think it's hilarious that the guys who originally were like, oh, you can't go up there, he's busy, like, once they get the go-ahead, just, like, let him go up there and shoot him.
Right. Everyone answers to somebody kind of a thing. I guess for those that don't know, I did look up the actual definition of perdition. And so it is a state of eternal punishment and damnation into which sinful and unpenitent a person passes after death.
Mm.
And so that's the road to that, is what this movie is called. I guess the last thing I wanted to talk about is the ending, and you already mentioned the line, but I just think that it's so smartly written where he asks where Michael Jr. says if he's no good, or, you know, if he's a good man or no good at all, and he doesn't answer, and he just says he was my father. And I just like that sort of wraps up the way that this film is there's no real heroes or villains. It's all shades of gray. I mean, Michael Jr. is a good kid. But if Tom Hanks doesn't take that kill away from him, you could see him following in his footsteps, like you said.
Right.
And so you could see him going bad, and you could see in different circumstances most of these characters being either good or bad, except for probably Jude Law and Daniel Craig.
Right.
So I don't know, I think it's an interesting movie.
Well, yeah, and it's like the relationship between father and son, because Paul Newman is, like, kicking the shit out of Daniel Craig.
Oh,
I thought he was having a heart attack.
I cursed the fucking day you were born, yeah.
You were born, and then they're hugging.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's like a father-son thing, and then that whole he was my father that ties it all together at the end.
Yes.
Which I was still kind of confused about that, but we'll let it go.
So what is interesting about this was a film that it's critically very well thought of, but it's not really that popular, I don't feel like.
So it's an opposite of a cult classic.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it did make $104 million, so it did make a lot of money. But it did have a budget of about $80 million, so it wasn't a gigantic success. I mean, it did make $20 million, but it's you know, it wasn't a runaway success. And then, like we were talking about, this did win, or this has been nominated for, oh, let's see, it is 6 Oscars in 2003, and it did win for Best Cinematography.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I think that was nice. And unfortunately, Conrad Hall, the cinematographer, died, and so it was awarded posthumously.
What?
So that's a bummer. But the other nominees were Best Actor in a Supporting Role for Paul Newman, Best Original Score, Best Sound Editing, and Best Art Direction in the Set Direction.
So I wonder if... because you said it was a graphic novel, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder if the pictures in the graphic novel were as pretty as the movie was.
I don't think so. I don't want to, like, disparage Richard Piers Rayner, but I don't think that it's particularly well known for that.
I don't think so.
I think what it is it's more known for the story than it is for the art. And yeah. And I guess the last thing I wanted to say about it is... I don't know where I got this from, but this is definitely not my own thought, but I really enjoyed it, so I'm going to swipe it. The film is very narratively simple, but it's very thematically complicated. And that's what I really like about it, with the fathers and sons and the surrogate fathers and sons and all of that kind of thing.
Right. Well, I mean, it's written, quote unquote, from the view of the kid, so.
Yeah, and it is very much a revenge film. You know, I mean, it's not complicated like that, but there's a lot more going on than just that.
Right. There are layers.
Yeah. And so that's what I enjoy about it. Mm. All right, Cruz. Well, let's move on to our next film, Mean Girls.
We have a new student with us. She just moved here from Africa.
Welcome.
I'm from Michigan.
Great.
I'm 16, but until today I was homeschooled, and then it was goodbye Africa. And hello, high school.
Hi, I'm Katie.
I'm Janice.
This is Damien.
Watch out! New meat coming through!
This map shows the school's central nervous system, the cafeteria.
You got your cool Asians, burnouts, jocks, the greatest people you will ever meet, and the worst.
So you've never been to a real school before?
Shut up.
Shut up! I didn't say anything.
Plastics.
Who are the plastics?
They're teen royalty.
That's Karen Smith.
She is one of the dumbest girls you'll ever meet.
I'm kind of psychic.
Really?
It's like I have ESPN or something.
Gretchen Wieners.
She has 2 Fendi purses and a silver Lexus.
And evil takes a human form in Regina George. She knows everything about everyone.
That's why her hair is so big. It's full of secrets.
We want to invite you to have lunch with us.
Regina seems sweet.
Get in, loser. We're going shopping.
Your house is really nice.
I know, right?
Being with the plastics was like leaving the actual world and entering girl world.
Have you seen any guys that you think you're cute yet?
There's this guy in my calculus class. His name's Aaron Samuels.
No, no. That's Regina's ex-boyfriend. Ex-boyfriends are off limits. I mean, that's just like the rules of feminism.
Gretchen told me that you like Aaron Samuels. I could talk to him for you if you want.
Really? You would do that?
You're so hot.
Why would she do that?
She's a life ruiner. I knew how this would be settled in the animal world. But this was girl world. All the fighting had to be sneaky.
I want to lose 3 pounds.
They're these nutrition bars my mom uses to lose weight.
It won't close.
It's a 5. You could try Sears.
Why are you eating a Caltine bar?
What?
You make you gain weight like crazy.
Who does she think she is? I, like, invented her.
I'm sorry I laughed at you.
I'm sorry I called you fat.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me. But I can't help it that I'm popular.
Talk it off! Walk it off!
Okay. You know who's looking fine tonight? Seth Mosikowski. He is your cousin.
What? He's a good kisser.
After growing up abroad, brainy teen Katie Heron, I wouldn't go that far, moves to Chicago and haphazardly joins her new high school's most powerful clique. But there's hell to pay when the ex-boyfriend of the clique's menacing leader shows interest in being Katie's guy. Lacey Chabert and Amanda Seyfried are also star in the sharply comic cautionary tale from writer Tina Fey, who also appears as Katie's math teacher. Or caddy, whatever you want to say.
Katie caddy. Caddy. Back and forth. So, Mean Girls, this is your other selection. This is a little bit different than Road to Perdition. it's also a little bit different from The Princess Bride, because The Princess Bride is so, like, genuine and fun and, like, innocent.
This is nasty.
This is a naughty little film.
So this, I picked this because, well, first of all, because I really like Mean Girls. This is one of the girly movies that I will happily say, I won't even call it a guilty pleasure. I'll just straight up say I like it.
Which is rare for you.
I know, because it's based on a self-help book called Queen Bees and Wannabes.
Really?
And Tina Fey must have read the book and then wrote the screenplay. I mean, the book is about cliques in high school, but it's like a self-help book for like moms who have teenage girls.
Mm.
And so then Tina Fey just took it and ran with it and wrote this movie. So like that's why I picked it, because I thought it was a really interesting way to go from a book to a movie.
Yeah, that is interesting. I did see that it was, you know, I guess I'd like to think that I look at the credits fairly closely when I'm watching a film, mm-hmm. but I had completely forgotten that this was a book. Because because this wasn't a first watch for me. I mean, I've seen this a few times, and it's, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that I think this is fun. It's a movie that I watched originally and was like, wow, that's actually pretty good.
Right. Well, it's Tina Fey, who is pretty much my idol. So.
She's smart.
Yeah, she is smart.
That's my first note, actually. Smart and fun script.
Well, yeah.
And then my next note is, oh my God, it must be so hard to be Lindsay Lohan in high school.
Or Lindsay Lohan watching this right now.
Yeah, no. I feel like Lindsay Lohan and Amanda Bynes, isn't that what her name is that's gone?
Amanda Seyfried?
No, Amanda Seyfried is.
Yeah, the one that went on Nutbag.
Yeah, Amanda Bynes, when she watches like She's All That or whatever.
Yeah.
I would like to watch these movies with those girls. And just to watch their reactions.
Oh, I used to be so hot.
Yeah, look how attractive I used to be.
Let's go do some cocaine, guys.
Yeah, let's talk about Drake or whatever that dude's name is.
So, yeah. I feel like this is pretty much Lindsay Lohan's last movie.
Yeah, really?
In 2004, so she's come a long way. But yeah, I like everybody. So what do you think about Rachel McAdams in this?
You know, I don't really think that she's very, she doesn't look very good.
No.
She looks much better with, like, her natural hair color and it being curly. Like, she looks a lot more plain to me in this.
Well, and I feel like her hair color is, like, the same color as her face.
Yeah.
And so it's no good.
Yeah, I think you're right on. Right on.
But you know, I'm sure that they had to make her with blonde hair and all that other good crap. So
yeah, there's actually some interesting other stuff in here. Like Lacey Chabert was the first and only choice for Gretchen.
Really?
Yeah, but Amanda Seyfried, who originally was supposed to play Katie, and then Lorne Michaels thought that she would be better as the dumb girl.
Well, she does a really good job as the dumb girl.
Yeah. I think it's almost as interesting to look at where all of these careers have gone since this film than it is to look at the actual film.
Yeah, I was thinking that when I was watching it.
Yeah. Because some of them, like some of my favorite things is, what is his name? It's Tim Meadows as the principal. Like, I think he's genuinely very funny in this, and I think he's awful in everything else.
What about Ladies' Man?
No, don't even talk to me about that. I never thought that the ladies' man thing was funny.
What?
Never did. I think what it was is I was so clued into there was going to be terrible impressions of it as soon as it came out, to where that I was like, oh no, I can't even enjoy this.
Yeah.
I can't even enjoy it for what it is.
Except for I bought it, so that's fine.
I'm sure you did. I also think that Amy Poehler is a very interesting role in this.
Yeah, you don't really... Well, I mean, like, I feel like this is one of their, like, first movies. Like, this was one of their switches from TV to movies,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I hadn't seen Tina Fey in anything before this.
Yes, right.
And so she always brings Amy around, and they are ridiculous together, so...
Yeah, and Amy Poehler, who I think is great in Parks and Rec, is very much a different character here.
Right.
She's like so gross, but gross in the fact that I can absolutely believe that there are mothers like this.
Oh, totally.
And that's what makes me sickened by it.
Well, and that's what makes her daughter the way she is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fun mom, not a mom. It's like, yeah. Barf.
Do you want some alcohol in this? Because I'd rather have you drink in the house.
Ugh. My mom would be like, seriously?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, now she's fine with it. But okay. When I was in high school, that didn't fly.
Yeah. The other one that I think is interesting is Lizzie Kaplan, who plays Janice.
Right.
She looks a little bit different in True Blood than she does in this.
Oh, I've never seen her in True Blood, but she was on New Girl. She was Nick's girlfriend.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, it's Janice.
Yeah, she is. She was in some of the earlier New Blood or True Blood, sorry, in one of the earlier episodes of that, and she's naked a lot.
Oh.
And she's a very well put together woman, I will say that.
Fair enough.
Like, you were like, holy shit. And she doesn't look anything like that in this. Like, because here she's like frumpy and has this, you know, she's allegedly a lesbian and all that.
Going on. She's like half of a ponytail, only the wrong half.
Yeah, it's really weird the way that she looks.
Yeah. Yeah, who else do we need to talk about? Yeah, Amanda Seyfried. Wasn't she in Les Mis? Wasn't that her?
Yeah, she was in Les Mis. I mean, she was a big deal. She's kind of on the backside of being a real big deal, I feel like.
Yeah. And that gets so good for her.
Yeah, because, you know, she did Dear John and Red Riding Hood and and then Les Mis. But she was also in Mamma Mia.
Yeah, I own that.
Boy, that's awful.
Yeah, I don't care.
That's really not good, Cruz. But yeah, she was in the film Chloe, which is actually quite good. I like that quite a bit. Where she's a, it's her and... oh, shit, what's her name? It's Julianne Moore. Her and Julianne Moore and Liam Neeson.
Oh.
And basically, Julianne Moore, this is one to check out, too. Like, it's not really that highly regarded, but I think it's good. It's the plot synopsis from IMDb is a doctor hires an escort to seduce her husband, who she suspects of cheating, though unforeseen events put the family in danger. And it's basically to where Chloe is this escort, and she sort of falls in love with the husband and the wife.
What?
And so Julianne Moore continually like pushes her to seduce her husband, even though he's like clearly not particularly interested.
Which is weird, because if I was Liam Neeson and I had to pick between those two, it wouldn't even be a choice.
And so, so he, you know, he's trying to be like the dutiful husband and saying, no. And Julianne Moore just keeps pushing her, and then she ends up getting close to Amanda Seyfried, and there's some nudity, and it's a naughty little film, but it's pretty good.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, anyway, it's a good movie.
So my question to you is, do you feel like this accurately depicts high school girls?
I hope not. I honestly hope not. So many things in this, like the, some of the things that drive me crazy is like when Gretchen keeps trying to do the fetch, stop trying to make fetch happen.
Yes. Not going to happen.
Right. That happens a lot around the golf course. A lot of guys that work there have a lot of things that they try to make into things.
Oh, really?
Like, we're going to say this kind of a thing.
So high school girls are like old men?
Well, not like old guys. I'm talking about employees, like college age guys.
Oh.
Yeah,
I can see that.
So they do a lot of that. There's this was kind of my, not really introduction, but really the wide, like the spreading of the quote, I know, right, unquote.
Yeah.
When people are like, I know, right? And that has been around for way too long already. And I'm ready for that to go away.
Aria. Mm-hmm. My favorite line in this whole movie is, "Four for Glen Coco, you go, Glen Coco."
You go, Glen Coco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I almost bought my little sister a shirt for Christmas last year that said that.
Oh, really?
And she hated it.
I believe it. I actually think it's an interesting choice. I don't know that it's always successful, but when they do the sort of animalistic versions of the high school.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't think they do it enough to make it like consistent, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like they only do it every once in a while. But as far as like this being real, I feel like it's an extreme as far as teenage girls go. But like I knew a girl like in our school that acted like Rachel McAdams.
Like Regina?
Yeah.
Really?
To a point. Because, like, there would be some, you know, like, it reminded me, it, like, harkened back when she's at the party, and she kind of just, like, makes something up, like, right off the top of her head.
Oh, yes.
Like, you get somebody else to look like an idiot. Like, I knew a girl who used to do that all the time.
Hmm.
Like, just for her own device. And it, like, so, I mean, like, in Oakland, you know, obviously there wasn't a lot of, like, cliques and stuff like that. It was basically whoever could drink could hang out.
And that's Oakland, Nebraska, for the viewer, or for the listeners, not Oakland, not Oakland, California.
Yeah, a little bit smaller.
A little bit.
But I mean, like, there are some little truths to what is going on. Like, obviously the insecurities and stuff like that. Like, when I was in high school, there was stuff like that going around. This is obviously like 10 times the extreme of what actually happened, but
mm-hmm.
There's kind of some similarities that are a little bit eerie.
Well, so. I think the sort of, you know, high school tradition of grouping all of the groups together and naming them and all that, like, I feel like a lot of that is pretty factual.
Right. I like how they were pretty funny about the groups, though.
Well, it was like the cool Asians and the nerdy Asians.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Here's something that I wanted to bring up for you. I felt like at the end of the day, it was still cooler to be one of the plastics than it was to be one of these other people.
Well, there aren't any plastics anymore.
Well, right, but I mean, it's still like, the goal is still to be one of the popular kids, is what I felt like.
Well, yeah.
And I don't know, like, I feel like the movie is trying to tell you, be cool and be one of these, because it's like, all of the good lines and all of the good insults are either about the plastics or pointed to the plastics, right?
Right, but I mean, like, the nerdy artsy girl, she had a lot of really good one-liners.
What's right, but they're...
What's made out of? Your mom's chest hair?
Yes, that's true. I don't know. I guess I just got the impression that it wasn't really, like, I don't know. I guess I wanted it to send a message more than it did.
Well, I get what you're saying, but I don't think that's what it was about. I mean, it was just about, well, because at the end... Those girls that were trying to be plastics almost got hit by the bus, so I don't really know how much more of a message you would need.
Ah, that's true. That's a good point.
You know, and everybody else found their little neat... I guess I thought the end kind of wrapped it up really well, like, you're trying to be something now, you're trying to fit in, and then everyone else ended up finding a place where they actually did fit in and felt better about themselves.
Hmm.
So suck one on that.
Well, it's just... I don't know. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I know.
I understand. So anyway, that's all my notes on Mean Girls. Do you have anything else that you wanted to say about that one, Cruiser?
I just want to reiterate my love for Tina Fey. That's about it.
Yeah, I really like the opening where she's introduced and she gets the coffee spilled all over her.
Oh my god, my t-shirt's sticking to my sweater, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep, and she's doing the, can you ask me another time when my shirt's not see-through?
Right. And he just straight looks at her boobs and mm-hmm. walks away.
Yeah, that's very good. I do like that. I do like that. Okay, unfortunately, Rachel couldn't be with me to discuss our last film, so I'm going to be doing it solo, which could be interesting. But our film that I had selected for my second pick is 2006's Away From Her.
Half the time I wander around looking for something, I can't remember what it is. Everything is gone.
I couldn't just leave her here.
We understand it is very difficult to leave a loved one in a new environment for so long.
I don't think I like the place.
I think all we can aspire to in this situation is a little bit of grace.
I can't go away from you like this.
I need to stay here, and if you make it hard for me, I might cry so hard I'll never stop. I'd like to make love, and I'd like you to go.
She was 18, and she said, "Do you think it'd be fun if we got married?" I never wanted to be away from her.
Don't let your mind get weary.
Amber Chucky carries it over the blue line.
Oh, that's Frank. He used to be the play-by-play guy for the Jets.
What we're handling isn't so easy.
There she is.
Don't let your heart get heavy.
So you made a new friend. Fiona, what are you doing with that man?
He doesn't confuse me. He doesn't confuse me at all.
Look at me, Fiona. I'm your husband. We've been married for 45 years. We've had a good life together.
Don't.
There's a man with a broken heart, broken in a thousand pieces.
Things aren't ever what you hoped it'd be. Not ever. For anybody.
Especially when they're deprived of seeing someone they care about.
It's just life.
Grant plunges into an emotional abyss after moving his Alzheimer's-stricken wife to a nursing facility and keeping his distance for her benefit. When she turns her affections towards another man, waves of guilt for past behavior pass over Grant. Julie Christie earned an Oscar nomination for portraying the fading yet graceful Fiona in this astute and solemn tale written and directed by Sarah Polley. Okay, so since this is just by myself and I'm a little bit uncomfortable doing this, I'm just going to talk about the notes that I have here and a little bit about what I liked about this film and why I selected it. It was a, like I said, it did come out in 2006. It is a, based on a short story, The Bear Came Over the Mountain by Alice Munro, who is one of my favorite short story writers. And I do really appreciate short stories in general. And so that's one of the reasons why I selected this. My kind of brief history with this film is, I watched this during my 365 movies in 365 days challenge in 2011, and I loved it. It's a film that is very difficult. It's not exactly as fun as the Mean Girls and Princess Brides that we've talked about earlier in this episode, but it's one that I do feel like people should check out. So I guess getting into my notes, as the plot summary said, this is about a old man who's dealing with his wife that has Alzheimer's and deciding whether or not to have her placed into a home. While I watched this, I realized that this is probably the hardest thing that I could imagine, you know, being married for not that long, I mean, about 3 years or so. It's the idea of spending 40 plus years with your spouse and then losing them slowly, losing them a little bit of a time, not dramatically, not in an accident, not in, not in a real aggressive illness. It's as if the person that you know just vanishes. And then the person that you know isn't around to, or doesn't understand exactly who you are and isn't around to, I guess, help you cope. That's what I think is so hard. What I really like about it is I think that Sarah Polley does a really good job of not exploiting what could be a very melodramatic story. She doesn't go for big dramatic sequences. She doesn't let the music swell, and she doesn't focus on the pain that Grant is going through. And I really like that. I like that she kind of plays it straight. She plays it as Grant, played by Gordon Pinsett, who unfortunately passed away right after the filming of this. I think he's fantastic, but he's also he's a very proud actor. He's very much he's very much a man that doesn't wear his heart on his sleeves, like someone I know. And he's a guy that, is very much in love with his wife and will do anything he'll do anything to make sure that he's there for her. And, you know, the title of the film, which is obviously different than the short story, is he says a few times in the film he never wanted to be away from her. And I just find that so sweet. I think that, there's an older woman who is introduced when Grant and Fiona go into the nursing home for the first time, and she is she's wondering if Grant is a charmer, and she's quite a naughty little old lady, and she's very fun, and she's shown sign languaging later, and that's a very sad storyline in and of itself, but she's a very fun character. And I really kind of appreciate the little glimpses and little bits of humor that the film does have. And one of the things that I did do in this film was I wrote down, for me, a decent amount of quotations. One of them is, I think all we can aspire in this situation is a little bit of grace. And I think that hits so true. I think that's such a true note that the writer-director Sarah Polley hits, that it's very hard. Like, she knows that she's slipping away. She knows that she's not the person that she used to be. And all she wants is a little grace. All she wants is a little dignity. And it's hard for her and confusing for her when Grant goes to see her, because she does seem to fall for this Aubrey character, who is a man that is very dependent upon her. You know, he's a character that I don't particularly enjoy. I watch him and my note says, you know, fucking Aubrey. I fucking hate that guy. Because, you know, he's the antagonist. He's the one who's keeping our two lovers apart. You know, I feel like that these two actors are brilliant. I love that their personalities. I love the actors themselves and the way that they play this. I love that the characters that they are. There's not anything that I would change about the way that these two are when they're, you know, both functioning, obviously. And they're very much in love, and it's really heartwarming to watch them. One of the things that I think Grant, again, makes a good point about is that he says everyone wants to be in love every day. And I think that that's a really, again, crucial line, because I think that that's true. I think that especially when people are single or when people are first married, that's their goal. That's what they want. And, you know, that's realistically not something that happens. And that's fine. It's not like, you know, it's not like you turn away at the first sign of adversity. It's something that you deal with. It's something that, you know, you go through and you endure, and everyone strives to be in love every day, but I don't believe that that's necessarily the case. Close to that line is a line from Fiona, and she says that she's going. She says, I'm going, but I'm not gone. And that was heartbreaking. Like, that was heart. I mean, obviously, as you could probably tell, like, I'm having a tough time talking about this film, but I think that the way that she plays it and she was nominated for an Oscar, like I said earlier. She is so goddamn noble, and she's just, you know, she knows this is a terrible thing that's happened to her. She's very young. They mention that she's very young for this illness. But she doesn't necessarily want, she doesn't want Grant to forget her because she loves him, but she knows sort of the state that she's in. And they do restrict him from visiting her for 30 days, which would be completely heart-wrenching. It's supposed to be for her benefit, to help her adjust and to not be confused. Although one of the nurses does say she believes it's more for the staff than it is for the actual patient. And one of the notes that I wrote was, it's during this time where she sort of is enamored with Aubrey, and I don't particularly believe that she's in love with him. I don't think that she is confused and thinks that that's her husband. I think that she sees him as uncomplicated. He doesn't confuse her. It's easier for her. And that, I guess that's the way that I view it. Although when he leaves, when he goes home to Olympia Dukakis's character's house, when he goes back, she is devastated. And the toughest part for me watching it is watching Grant, our main character, and watching him observe his sick wife, who is sick because of another man has left. And I mean, that's such a hard situation. I feel like a lot of people go to the movie for the escapism of it. And I don't necessarily buy into that all of the time. Like, for listeners of the show, like, I tend to like movies that are a little bit more downbeat, I guess, than that. And it's not necessarily because that's how I am. I just feel like it's a story. Everything's a story. And, you know, most stories are not like a Transformers. This is real life. And I think that this is a story worth telling. It's a story worth watching. I think it's a great time. It might not sound like it, but I think it's so important and so expertly crafted that, I really enjoy it. Some of my other notes here is there is a slight bit of political commentary in this film. He says, or they're watching the Gulf War. She says, excuse me. She says, how could they ever forget Vietnam? And what I like about that is, you know, it's very similar in that there's, you know, the social commentary and that not everyone's agreeing with the war that was going on. It's, you know, in a land where the U.S. doesn't necessarily have the, enough knowledge, you know, and I guess I don't want to make this into a political discussion about, you know, should they be over in Iraq or not and all that kind of thing. But I just think that it was interesting because it's just one little line that they throw in there, and it's something that you could ignore, and it's something that I kind of wish I knew was in the book or not, because I'm not exactly sure when this book was or when the short story was written, but I thought that was interesting. So I guess I just really love these characters. I love that they all have a sense of pride about them. And my feeling is that pride is something that isn't necessarily in abundance anymore. I feel like it's something that maybe could be largely gone once this generation is over. And by this generation, I mean this older generation, your 60s and 70-year-olds. And I guess I feel that way because, I don't know, I guess the people I see and the people that I know that are around my age or, you know, a few years older than me, they don't tend to have the sort of stoicism or the sort of quiet knowledge that Grant has. Like, he seems to, you know, he's suffering. He's having a hard time. He is going through a lot mentally, but he doesn't really show his frustration very much. he doesn't really act out in any way, because he has too much pride. You know, he doesn't feel the need to embarrass himself or draw attention to himself. And I feel like that is a quality that a lot of people that I know are lacking, to where, you know, he's not necessarily being selfish or sacrificing himself. And I feel like that anymore these days, you're doing one or the other. You're either being selfish or you're being a martyr. And I think that there's a lot more shades than the black and white of that. And so, yeah. So, as you can probably tell, I stumbled through explaining why I felt that. I'm not used to talking only about a film by myself. But that was away from her. That was basically all that I wanted to say. So I guess I will, I'll wrap this one up. Excuse me, my voice is about gone. But if you have any comments for the show or movies that you would like to hear us talk about, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. Or you could follow the much-missed Miss Cruz, and she's @cruzballtable. We do have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. You could also friend us over there. If you enjoyed the show and you wanted to help us out a little bit, or if you wanted to maybe, you know, take a chance on one of these movies that you may not have seen, they are not going to be very expensive over at Amazon. We're going to have links over on our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. If you click on those links that we'll have on there and you buy the movie, it does help us out. We do get a little bit of that money, and it doesn't cost you anything. So finally, please spread the word. Tell anyone and everyone you know that might enjoy the podcast. And write us an iTunes review, which is really the best way to help get the word out about our little show. So thank you for indulging me talking about the movie by myself there. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a special guest who you may remember from our Harry Potter discussion. So we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Come, my love, I'll tell you a tale of a boy and girl and their love story, and how he loved her oh so much, and all the charms she did possess. Now this did happen once upon a time, when things were not so complex, and how he worshipped the ground she walked, and when he looked in her eyes, he became obsessed. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. It's as real as the feelings I feel. This love was stronger than the power so dark a prince could have within his keeping. His spells to weave and steal a heart within her breast, but only sleeping. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. It's as real as the feelings I feel. He said, don't you know I love you oh so much, and lay my heart at the foot of your dress. She said, don't you know that storybook loves always have a happy ending.
and he swooped her up just like in the books. And on his stallion they rode away. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. It's as real as the